Dan Celia.
I want to be a nation that is on the biblical principles and the values and the ethics that are found in Scripture.
Your personal economy.
Financial issues that you need to know.
Aligning reality with truth.
But I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the founding fathers.
Now, here's your host, Dan Celia.
Welcome back, Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia. It's great to be here. 844-707-5533. If you want to queue your call up, you're welcome to do it. We do have our ag report coming up, a little bit more important as we think about getting a little bit closer to a deal with China. And it does look like that is going to be happening. I know everybody's focused on earnings this week, which makes sense. Should be. I get that. There's a lot of optimism in Asia as the markets there are already closed in positive territory, but there's a lot of optimism there because of China and U.S. trade talk. So what's happened is Steve Mnuchin came out indicating that one of the stumbling blocks that I've talked about, a number of these stumbling blocks, one of them was this notion that China has to curb its industrial subsidies. So they give subsidies to industrial companies. And that's what creates dumping, a practice that's called dumping. And what dumping means is you go to the shores of America or wherever, whatever country, and you just dump steel, meaning you sell it to anybody that will buy it for any price. And you try to grab market share and you sell it below what it costs to actually make the steel. That's how cheap you're selling it. And then the government subsidizes that company by giving them money that they would have made or to bring them back to even again. And remember, these are companies that are owned by the communist regime. They can do whatever they want. And they've done that for years. Three years ago, the number one export, and this, you might remember this because I was a lunatic over this, because it's something that I predicted was going to happen, and I was just crazy when it did happen. And that was one of the things they dumped was gasoline. And they were selling refined gasoline. It was their number one export last year as well. It's been their number one export, gasoline. They don't have any oil. They're dumping gasoline and they don't have oil. So they've got to import their oil, refine the gasoline. They have refineries, they refine it, and then they sell the gasoline. Now, you'll remember if you follow me for any length of time, that was my number. I was on that like a madman about the fact that we ought to be selling distilled products. We are now, but we should have been doing it 4 or 5 years ago when we could have gained market share, and we weren't doing it because the oil companies were pushing to get Congress to allow them to export crude oil, which they finally did under the Obama administration, and they got to exporting. My position was, and I was a lone wolf on this, my position was this is lunacy. If you sell crude oil, you're selling jobs. You're giving jobs away. If we sell the refined product, we get to build jobs and keep jobs here in America, hundreds of thousands of jobs, and we get to export crude oil and gain market share when nobody else can gain that market share because they don't have the oil. We didn't do it. Now, a country like China, who has no oil, has got market share on gasoline. Go figure. So but this is all because of that practice of dumping. And the most interesting part of all of this, another thing, I hate to keep bringing these things up. It's one of those days. I don't mean to. It just is what it is about something I said. I don't normally like to do that. But look, it is a fact. So I wrote about and talked about when President Obama on a Tuesday signed the Paris energy, green, I don't know, global warming accord on a Tuesday, and then Thursday signed into law was okay for oil companies to export crude oil. And I said, that's the most ironic thing that I've ever seen. And nobody talked about it. Not one person. Not one person. I was it. Nobody talked about it. When I said, look, you just signed to reduce carbon emissions, yet you're going to send crude oil to India and China and other places that are going to refine it, making a carbon footprint half the size that we would make if we refined it here. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I was the only one that was mentioning that. So President Obama signs that we're going to reduce carbon footprint, and then he allows American companies to export crude oil instead of saying, hey, how about we refine it here rather than give those countries a chance to refine it without the controls and the regulations to control to refine it as clean as possible. Lunacy. And then you have China turning around being the number one exporter. Their number one export commodity is gasoline. And I'm sure, they're not. And all of that carbon is coming all to the intelligentsia community of Hollywood that was so against, they were so happy to get rid of the oil when President Obama signed the agreement. I mean, do you see the lunacy in all this? It drives me nuts. But this is what was going on. And so we're probably going to continue to allow this practice of industrial subsidies. That's fine. We got to do at this point what we've got to do, but we've negotiated ourselves into this corner. So now we've got to do it. That's fine. I'm all for doing it because I'm desperate to get a deal done because I do care about the broader economy here in America and in the Eurozone, and that's going to help. So we've got to do it at this point. Anyway, Craig Halgart's going to talk about commodities, obviously, and how important this is as we head into the sowing season. And I know all of you farmers are concerned about that, as you should be. We'll be right back right after Craig.
This is Craig Halgart with your Financial Issues Egg update for Wednesday, July 17th. Corn fell victim to an improvement in their crop ratings, as well as weather models, putting increased chances of rain into the Corn Belt yesterday. As a result, it closed 5 to 6 cents lower. As I record this, the overnight spot corn futures are seeing some additional downside pressure and trading 2 cents lower. Soybeans were pressured by improved crop conditions and a more positive weather forecast as well. It's worth noting that even with the improvement, we still trail last year's good to excellent rating by 15%. This is an immature crop with only 22% blooming compared to the five-year average of 49%. We're going to need the weather to cooperate and give us enough time to set a good number of pods before filling them. In the overnight trade, spot soybean futures are trading down 2 cents. Wheat was a bit lower yesterday as well. We remain uncompetitive in the export market, with Russia offering wheat at a considerable discount to our hard red winter wheat, while France is selling at a discount to our soft red winter wheat. In the overnight trade, Chicago and Kansas City are each 4 cents lower, while Minneapolis is down 3. Cotton futures were softer yesterday, with December futures 89 points lower as they closed at 63.06. In the overnight trade, spot futures are trading 11 points lower. Livestock futures were mixed yesterday, with cattle lower and hogs weaker in the spot market and stronger in the deferred. August live cattle futures finished the session down 27.5 cents, while August feeder cattle futures closed down 60 cents for the day. Lean hog futures were mixed, with August a buck and a nickel lower, while October futures were $1.40 higher. After a couple of tough sessions, Class 3 milk futures got back on the winning track, with the August futures 7 points higher to settle at $17.50. And the overnight trade futures are trading an additional point higher. In the cash markets, choice beef boxes were 34 cents lower to settle at $2.12.93, while selects were a nickel lower for the day at $1.89.16. In hogs, the pork carcass values finished $2.90 higher to close at $75.80. This has been Craig Halgart with your Financial Issues Ag Update. We'll be right back with more financial issues after this.
404-707-5533. Yesterday, you may remember that I mentioned something about a tweet that President Trump sent out. And the tweet goes like this. This is something he sent out yesterday morning, still very appropriate here this morning. And I wanted to talk about it because there's one specific thing about this tweet. Maybe some of you can see it up on your screen. But important thing on this tweet. And it is the very last line of the tweet. But let me just read the whole thing. So this was one of his shots at the Federal Reserve to try to keep interest rates lower or even lower rates. And I did talk a little bit about it yesterday. But he says China is adding great stimulus to its economy while at the same time keeping interest rates low. Our Federal Reserve, first of all, why are we comparing a communist regime to our Federal Reserve? But anyway, that's a whole nother story for another time. But our Federal Reserve has increasingly lifted interest rates, even though inflation is very low, and instituted a very big dose of quantitative tightening. We have the potential to go up like a rocket if we did some lowering rates, like one point, and at one point, and some of the quantitative easing. Yes, we are doing very well with a 2.3% GDP growth. But with our wonderful low inflation, we could be setting major records. And at the same time, okay, here's what I wanted to mention. And at the same time, make our national debt start to look small. What's wrong with that picture? Come on now. Make our national debt start to look small. I don't know about you, but do we want our national debt to look small? Or do we want our national debt to begin to get small? There's a big difference. Here's what looking small looks like. When we have growth in our GDP, that's a very good thing. GDP is going up. As GDP goes up, let's just say our GDP, for conversation's sake, is $16 trillion. Well, guess what? First quarter of the year, it's up 3%. 3.5% really, because you got to add 0.3 to the 3.2% for the government shutdown. And now we're up 3.5% on our GDP of whatever it might be, $16 trillion. The GDP number goes up significantly, right? What happens when GDP goes up significantly, the calculation of debt to GDP goes down, right? Because the debt is being calculated on a larger number. If debt is being calculated on a larger number, then debt is going to give the appearance of going down, or it's going to head a little bit closer to the safe zone that politicians believe is about 72-75% debt to GDP. And that's very reasonable, manageable, and great compared to other developed nations like the number two and the number three economy, largest economies in the world. So that would be China and Japan. So it is true, he is absolutely right, that if we continue to see markets going up and we continue to see GDP going up, then we are likely to look as though our debt is getting smaller, even though the number dollar-wise may be the same on our debt or going up a bit. It is going to be calculated against a GDP number that is much larger because of the growth factor. Now, I'm all for that, and I don't think the president misspoke here. And I'm all for our GDP going up. But at what point in time does it create another government smoke and mirror show on our national debt? we don't want GDP, we don't want our national debt to look smaller. We want our national debt to begin to decrease in size. Yes, I would agree with President Trump, Steve Mnuchin, and the rest that are saying, and I've been saying this for 10 years at every town hall meeting that I ever, that I've spoke at in the last 10 years, and that's been a lot and in front of a lot of people, I have said that we cannot get our growth under control in this nation when we do not have growth in our GDP. It is going to be impossible. I even go on to say that when we look at our national debt, we can blame it all on Obama if we want to do that. Do I believe that Obama played a significant role in our national debt? Of course I do. He doubled what he criticized George Bush for having. He went and doubled it. But we have not had any real GDP growth since the last two terms, or I would say before the last 2 years of the Bush administration. And that adds and factors in a very heavy way to our national debt. So it's not all of their faults. A lot of it is that they did nothing about trying to grow the economy to help with that. But here's something that it seems no president has understood since Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan got this. He understood it. Apparently, Ronald Reagan's economic team understood this, and his economic team made it very clear to the president. We apparently haven't had that in a number of years. You definitely need to create an environment in the government by which the economy is going to grow, because the environment then becomes conducive for private sector free market economy to grow, to add jobs, to expand, for consumers to spend, for consumers to have more discretionary income. We need to create, the government's responsibility is to create an environment where the economy is going to grow. They can't create the economy and make the economy grow. They can't create jobs, but they can create the environment in which the private sector is going to grow. And nobody has done that until now, until this president, creating an environment, a pro-growth environment. But what we have to understand, which everybody in Washington continues to miss, that is about 60% of the problem with the national debt taken care of. But the other 40% has to come from cutting the government, from shrinking the size of government. So I wonder what we will do if we ever overrode or did away with Obamacare. Would we do away with the 152 new departments in the government that it created? I doubt that we will, because it's a federal government and we do not lay off people. We do not cut departments. We shift them around. That's what we do. That's why we have such a problem. So are we going to do that? Probably not. But what Ronald Reagan did demanded was that every department of the government, with the exception of the Department of Defense, would cut their budget by 4%. Now, the aftermath of that was that those departments ended up cutting far more than 4% once they got on a roll of getting rid of the duplicity, getting rid of the senseless things that they were doing, creating some early retirement opportunities for those employees that have been working for a long time, and shrunk the size of government. That, along with the incredible growth that, don't get me wrong, I give 100% credit for the growth that we are experiencing in this economy to this president and his pro-growth agenda. Because during the Obama administration, I was more than willing to give all of the credit to President Obama for the fact that we didn't have any growth. I got criticized for that, but that is exactly what the case was, because he didn't know how to create a pro-growth environment and didn't want to create a pro-growth environment because he was too busy apologizing for the growth environment for the last 200 years in America. And the last thing he wanted to do was apologize for American exceptionalism and then go out and create more exceptionalism through a pro-growth environment. Not to mention, he didn't have any idea how to do that and didn't have people surrounded him that wanted to do that. And it was totally against the ideology of that entire administration. But I want desperately to be able to say that this president has not only been the first president in many years that has been focused like a laser on American exceptionalism in a positive way, focused on continuing that American exceptionalism and focused on creating an environment by which that American exceptionalism was going to thrive. And I want to be able to say that this is the only president in many, many years that has ever been focused like a laser on shrinking the size of government, reducing the power that and he's already done that through regulatory burden alone. And there have already been budget cuts, but we need to stay focused on that. If we can put together a combination of this pro-growth environment that is well on its way, it's already done, and then start looking at where and how we can cut the deficit, oh my word. And I hope that he does that. We need him to do that. Welcome back, Financial Issues. I'm Dan Seeley, 844-707-5533, 844-707-5533. I was talking to David from Mississippi, and he was asking me some questions, and it's a very good question because a lot of people have that same question of, you know, there's a group of stocks, you know, what is there, you know, the process of going through picking, you know, you're obviously not going to buy all the stocks on the buy list unless there's only two or something, but, you know, going through that process. So, you know, one of the things that I would say to you, David, first of all, I like what you're doing and I think you ought to keep doing it, you know, going through and looking at the charts and going back. That's all a very good thing to do. It gives you a comfort level, gives you some understanding. One of the things that I would tell people to do is when you're doing that and you have, let's say you pull up MA31 and you pull up MA35 and you look at the two from a 3-year, 5-year, 10-year perspective. And one of them has never had a negative 3-year, 5-year, 10-year. One of them has. I would pick the one that doesn't. That's a good thing. That means there's some stability there that is likely to carry through. Not it's not a guarantee, but it's likely to carry through. Say all three of them are down, both of those, when you look at the 3-year, 5-year, 10-year, and maybe year-to-date, maybe they're all negative. But one is going to be more negative than the others. And one thing that you will see on both charts when you're trying to pick one is there is a dip at the exact same time of year. When you look at a line chart, you'll see that little drop
and that drop is going to be, in all likelihood, at the very same time of year. And so you want to look at maybe the highs are pretty much the same, but the drop isn't dropping as much as on one that it is another. That, again, might say to you that, well, that's a little bit more stable on the downside. Frankly, me, my analytics, as it goes much deeper than this, all I care about, I start from the downside. I don't look much. I don't pay a lot of attention to the upside. It plays a very insignificant part of how I pick stocks. Because I believe that when the economy is good, you know, all boats are going to rise. So I don't, you know, I don't pay a lot of attention to that, but I do pay more attention to the downside. So, you know, you can look at little things like that. And the more you look and the more you pull those charts out, you'll start seeing some of the differences that point to some, possibly some more stability. It could, and if you're looking at it and there's a consistency in the 3, 5, and 10 year, then it's not just an anomaly. It's not a one-off. It's not, you know, there is a consistency that this stock, you know, has performed a certain way, probably because of the whatever they do or the management of it or whatever it might be under a down situation. So a lot of times, though, that dip might be because one's a small cap, one's a large cap, or one's a mid cap, one's a large cap, one's a micro cap and a large cap. That's going to make a big difference as well. So, I mean, I would just continue to look at those things. From my perspective, when I am putting things on the buy list, I am looking at a long-term outlook for growth. And I believe that when I put them on, that they all have, you know, positive long-term outlook. I would always choose, probably not always, but if you're over 50 and in the environment in which we live in today, my first look would probably be foundational stocks. And there was a foundational stock, MA36, in material section, that was down considerably. Now, it had a 5% bump up. I think it was yesterday or the day before yesterday. I forget which. But, you know, it was definitely a good buy when you see a stock like that being where it is, then or the more reason to add to a foundational stock. So I would just, and every, that's the other problem too, David, is each sector, when you do this, you will notice a drastic difference between industrials and material sectors compared to IT, you know, technology sectors. They're going to be very different because their valuations are totally different than they would be on materials and industrials. So you're going to see different sets of, you know, effects for a small cap tech stock is going to be far more violent on the downside than would be a large cap tech stock. And the difference between the volatility of that micro cap and large stack on a tech, on a large stack on a technology side is going to be very different than the volatility of a micro cap and a large cap industrial stock. So anyway, you begin to look at some of those things. I look at, there are probably some small things that I take into account, but they would weigh a lot less heavy on my decision than would be some of the bigger things that I'm looking at, more technical things that I'm looking at. So, you know, but nonetheless, for somebody just kind of, you know, trying to wade through this for at an early stage of just getting used to all this, there would be a couple things you could look at.
Yeah, that helps a lot. Could you just tell me what is a foundational stock, though?
So a foundational stock would be one that is in yellow or blue with yellow writing. like one that's on the material section. And a foundational stock is a stock that is foundational to your portfolio. It is one of those stocks that you should always be looking almost every circumstance to keep. It's a it's foundational to your overall portfolio that everything else kind of builds off of. You don't sell it. You don't take profits. You can always add to it. But it's one that you're probably going to have in your portfolio for 30 years, 40 years, maybe in there, until somebody inherits it. I mean, so the foundational stocks tend to be this steady kind of consistent old growth companies or growth and income companies that plug along during almost all conditions of the economy. It doesn't mean they're not going to go down. They will, but they're not going to be, you're not going to see violent swings. You're not going to make 30% on any of them when the market is up 40%. Not going to happen. They may be up, 17%, but when everything else is up 40%, but they're not going to be down 30% when everything's down 30%. They may be down 2%. So they tend to be they tend to have more stability to them. And all of that foundational stability is determined purely by me. I don't want to make it sound like there's, places you can go out and find that. That's just something that I've done for 35 years that I've looked at very closely. And I count some of these companies as foundationals. And there are a couple reasons why and how I would want you to treat those foundationals. So when you see a foundational stock like IT or like MA36 on the list, and you see it well off its 52-week high or well off like MA36, I would tell you, there is almost not a time that at this point, if that dropped below 40, which is extremely unlikely, but it was looking like it could have gotten close. But if that dropped below 40, I don't care if it's on my buy list or not. I mean, that's just something you got to buy. If it's not on my buy list, I totally missed it. But there, you will get you. They're great stocks to build on your foundation. On your portfolio. So when all other things are driving you crazy and are all over the place and are down, these are companies that you just take a deep breath and say, well, I'm glad I own these companies.
I have one other quick question.
Okay.
Can I give you that one? I was just trying to determine return on investment with regard to dividends. And I just wanted to clarify my understanding of what you have on your site. First, the dividend rate is the amount paid out on an annual basis.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And if I want to calculate ROI, my understanding would be if I took the investment I had and divided by the price per share, that's going to tell me how many shares I purchased times the dividend rate will equal annualized dividend. If I divide that by my investment amount, that'll give me my ROI. Does that sound right?
That sounds right. I mean, I would just only look at the rate annually to determine your income. So again, 300 shares times 30 cents or whatever the amount of money is.
Right, right.
So if I want to see what my what your average return is, it's that 30 cents on the current share price.
Okay.
As a percentage, and you see what the percent is. Yep.
The annualized dividend divided by...
Yes.
...will give me my ROI.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Dan.
All right. Thank you, David. All right.
Okay.
All right, 844-707-5533. It's supposed to be Rapid Fire Friday. We'll keep working on it. So if you got a question, we got a line open. We'll be back.
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
Welcome back, Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia, 844-707-5533, 844-707-5533. If you want to queue your call up, you're welcome to do it, 844-707-5533. So you can queue your call up. We've got lines open. Again, 844-707-5533. Let me go to Rich. Rich is calling us from Texas. Hey, Rich.
Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, thanks, Rich.
Thanks for being there. Listen, my stock is Charlie Sierra 47.
Uh-huh.
It's I'm down about 6.5%, and I like to really buy some more when it gets down there. I'm looking for growth, basically. Do you think that would be a good idea right now?
Well, you know, it's up to you, Rich. You know, I always tell people that have the stock is totally up to you. You know your long-term outlook. You know, I like the stock. I still like it financially. It's a very strong company. Keep in mind, it's a micro cap. This is a company that's going to take big swings. It's going to go, you know, back and forth. I would consider this a great stock to buy even for new money. It's not on my buy list right now, but probably will be based on the move that it made really at the end of last month. Been waiting for it to turn a little bit negative on the year, which it just has. So, it is on my buy list. I'm sorry. You know, this is a good time to buy. I would consider it a strong buy. So you don't really, if you see something on my buy list, there's no sense in calling and asking whether I think you should dollar cost average. Obviously, it would not be on my buy list if that were the case, if I was worried about that.
Okay, Dan, that makes it a lot simpler. I appreciate it, and I'm sorry you're using up your time. But
no problem.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. All right. Thank you, Rich. 844-707-5533, 844-707-5533. So that's, folks, if you see something on my buy list and you already own it and you think you want a dollar cost average down because it's down, it's kind of a no-brainer at that point because it's on the buy list. Obviously, if I think it's good enough to get back on my buy list and keep on my buy list, then it's certainly good enough to add to, and it's good enough to even put new money towards it. So anyway, 844-707-5533. Let me go to Michael. Michael's calling us from Ohio. Hey, Michael.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just started listening to your station, and I'm kind of a new investor. Both my girlfriend and I just recently started. We are both started a Roth. We're in American Funds right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to know what you think about that. I need to get on your site, though, and look at your list.
Sure.
We do like to keep biblically with our finances and everything as well.
Sure.
And you thought about annuities. We're both business owners, as two, so we're looking into getting our SEPs because we're behind the eight ball right now.
Okay.
So I know what you thought about that.
Well, Michael, look, you guys sound like you're off on the right track. You're thinking about it. That is good. And you're working towards, absolutely, you should have a SEP. You should, no doubt about it. Are you in two separate companies, or do you both work in the same business?
We're in the same industry, but separate.
Separate, okay, gotcha. So you can each have your own SEP, which allows you to put a significant amount of money away, and that is good. So you'll catch up quickly as your business grows. So do that for certain. American funds are about the furthest thing from biblically responsible as you can get. They're huge supporters of abortion, probably one of the biggest supporters when it comes to all mutual funds. So I can't ever recommend those and wouldn't. But there's plenty of opportunity for you out there to and fairly easy to be biblically responsible. So, you know, that's not a big deal. Obviously, those things that you have already, if they are in positive territory, then, you know, I would sell them sooner rather than later. If they are not, you can wait a little bit, see if they come up in this, but at some point in time, you'll want to move out of those and put them in your SEP. So the downside to a SEP is you can't have a Roth SEP. So a SEP is always traditional. And most of the time in companies, you're looking for the traditional because it gives you a tax deduction, you know, for all the monies that you're putting in there. You're able to deduct that, and that's a good thing. So, but at the same time, if you're young, if you're under 50, you know, I like Roth because I like the tax-free growth, but you're not going to be able to put as much money as you probably need to or would like to in the Roth. So stick with the, and remember, whatever you have in the traditional, it'll roll over into your SEP. So that'll be your start, your kind of jump starting your SEP by your rolling in that traditional IRAs that you have.
Yeah, and are annuities the same? I mean, can you get into those just as well?
Sure, yeah. So here's what I think. How old are you guys? How many more years are you going to work?
I'm 48 and 50, and we got another 15 years.
Yeah. So look, I believe that if you want insurance, go to a life insurance company. If you want investments, go to a broker. If you want banking, go to a bank. I mean, I don't believe in them. They're not what they are perceived to be. And what I mean by that is they're not what you perceive them to be. Not that it's right. A shot at you at all, but it's the marketing and the way they're sold. So what you think you are seeing is probably in 90% of the time not accurate. But look, and all the fees that come out of all those things, it just doesn't make sense to me, particularly a young person like you guys. Man, you ought to be in either individual stocks or good solid mutual fund and invest your money that way.
And then one last real quick.
Sure.
Is Vanguard on the same as American funds?
Not even close, but they're not biblically responsible. So
they do have,
as a matter of fact, I have some Vanguard funds on my list. So it's not like there aren't any that aren't biblically responsible. I have a couple of their funds. But for the most part, the vast majority of their funds, or stock funds in particular, are not biblically responsible.
Okay, I need to get on your page and start looking at some stuff. So
Yeah, okay, and if great. You want to know anytime, you don't have to be a partner to do this. If you just want to know about a mutual fund or a stock, whether it's biblically responsible, on the front page of the site, financialissues.org, there, if you scroll down a little bit, you'll see a thing on the right-hand side that says screen your investments. It looks like a wheel with spokes. And if you click on that, you can put the symbol in of the mutual fund, and it'll tell you right away.
Okay.
All right.
All right, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
All right. Yep. Thanks for calling. See ya.
Right, bye.
844-707-5533. I got to wait here. I got to clear my screen. I don't know what's going on. There you go. All right. Let me go to Patty. Patty's calling us from Louisiana. Hey, Patty.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
Good morning. Beautiful weather down here.
Is it? Well, it's kind of nice here for a change, but.
Well, I've listened to AFR for years, but because of my work schedule, I really haven't been able to tune into you.
Uh-huh.
I have a good idea what biblically responsible means, but as a fairly new listener, I'm sure there's other fairly new listeners out there.
Sure.
I would like you to explain that. I have a good idea, but I just can't imagine that you would know the Christian views of all the companies, and that's what I'm thinking it might mean. So,
well, it's got so.
Yeah. That a little bit.
So it's got nothing to do with the Christian views of a company. It's got nothing. It's got nothing to do with. So when I say a company is biblically responsible, it doesn't mean that it is a Christian company. They may all be pagans. I mean, it doesn't. Who knows? I don't know. I don't look at that. That's kind of irrelevant. To the investment side. What we're looking at is what they do with our money. So if you're a stockholder, you're an owner of the company. So what are they doing? Where are they putting it and how are they making it? So how are they making their money? Are they making their money off of gambling and pornography and different forms of entertainment and whatever it is? Are they in taking the money that they've made and are they spending my money on those things? Are they supporting Planned Parenthood? Are they supporting that agenda? Are they supporting the redefinition of God's word? Are they supporting all those things with company money? If the president of the company is supporting those things with his own money, I don't look at that. I know people that do. I don't. I care about the money that I own, the company that I'm involved in, because I own that company, I own that stock. I care about where they're putting company money and how they're making their money. So that's what we look at.
Oh, okay. Well, that's very interesting. Well, thank you so much. Have a great day.
You're welcome. Thank you, Patty. 844-707-5533. 844-707-5533. Financial issues. Folks, we're coming up at the end of this hour. We'll be right back. More financial issues right after this. We've got phone lines open. 844-707-5533. We'll be right back.
Thank you for joining us. This has been an FISM production.